folks, Galen Clavio here, and welcome to the Bracket Racket, our weekly workout of college basketball as we check out the games that have been going on across the country here over the past week, really, as we didn't do our regular middle week show because, darn it, there just wasn't that much going on. But we're back, we're happy to be with you once again, and we're looking forward to talking to you for the next hour about college hoops. Joined by the normal panel tonight, Kyle Lamb, first up. Kyle, what's new?
Well, I actually just ordered my commemorative 37-3 Kentucky National Champion T-shirts.
That's going to be a classic.
Yeah, it's going to be a classic. Now, I'm sorry to tell you guys that if you're looking for the 37-3 version, it's already sold out. However, the good news is if you want 40-0 or 39-1 or 38-2 T-shirts, I hear they're on sale in the value bins in the state of Kentucky, so you can get them for half price.
We're really going to have a lot to talk about with this this Kentucky team and the hype surrounding them. It's been fascinating to watch, really, and it's been fascinating to watch the reactions to what's been going on with them so far this season. But we'll get to that here in a little bit. Lee Del Vecchio, it's funny, for whatever reason, both of the Liverpool fans that I regularly talk to have just decided that they're just going to descend on me right now as we start the podcast, and Lee is one of them. Lee, what's up?
Hello, yes, I hope you enjoy how festive Luis Alberto looks this evening.
Yeah, that's
that's the one I had to pick.
I'm glad you didn't go the direction I thought you were going to go with that. Yes, I know, it was 5-0.
5-0! Wait, what was the direction you thought I was going
to
go in?
We'll get into that later. We need to actually talk basketball on the show. But, no, congratulations to Liverpool. You beat a decidedly average Tottenham team.
Once a decade we're due for one.
Yeah, well, you know, this actually will work out, I think, for all parties involved. I think we'll see AVB heading back to the mainland at some point here soon. But anyway, that's another topic for another podcast. David Griggs also joining us. David, what's going on? Okay, well, David's not with us, so we'll just continue on, I guess.
Sarah, Stacy, whatever your name is, can you just get in a cab or something? I had fun and all, but I'm busy today. What?
All right, David, wake up. We have to do the podcast now.
Is it morning yet?
Yes, it's morning.
Oh, okay.
You could say when's the show starting?
Okay, we're just gonna continue on. When you wake up, you let us know. Anyway, let's someday we'll actually be able to run a serious show here. I don't know when, but. In the meantime, let's tackle some of the things that happened this past week. Well, guys, you know, some interesting results from these last few days. Let's start it back on Friday. Actually, well, you know what? Heck with it. Since we didn't cover anything earlier in the week, let's go ahead and go back to some of the games that happened during that time. This was kind of a sparsely populated week of basketball. I mean, this was not a week where we thought there were a huge number of games with a lot of implications, but there were a few. And I think probably what we should do is dial the time machine all the way back to Tuesday the 10th. As Florida and Kansas matched up, that one going on down at O'Connell. And Florida coming away with the victory here, a little bit more than people had predicted. They beat Kansas 67-61. This is a meeting of two teams that are kind of at an interesting crossroads. I mean, Florida's obviously had a tough start to the season between injury and suspension and just general uncertainty. But, you know, they looked pretty good against this Kansas team. And, Kyle, Kansas, for all of the hype that they got in the preseason, and some of that hype came from you and me, they've struggled a bit more, I think, than anybody would have expected them to so far this season.
Yeah, it's, you know, a classic case, and gee, where have we heard this before? A classic case of, you know, this is what you get from freshmen sometimes. And you know, the thing about this Kansas team is they've defended fairly well in stretches, but they just have not gotten any consistent offense at all. And Andrew Wiggins, you know, came on strong in the second half of that Florida game, but he's been a disappearing act for large stretches of many other games. And I think it's just a case where, you know, I think the sooner that Wiggins figures out Kansas needs him to be the go-to guy, he's got to forget the fact that he's got a soft demeanor, that he's not an aggressive scorer by nature, I think, you know, and I think he needs to put that aside and realize this Kansas team needs him to score. And I think if he figures that out, they'll be fine. But right now, it's just kind of a work in progress.
I did like what I saw out of Kansas in that New Mexico game. I also don't think New Mexico's quite as good as people have made them out to be. But, you know, they've struggled. You know, they lost to Colorado on the road. And granted, I mean, that game probably should have gone to overtime. And Colorado had to hit a miracle shot at the end to come away with the victory in regulation. They turn around, they lose to Florida. There's not much, how do I put this? There's not much in the way of shame in losing two road games like that to two teams that are going to be in the NCAA tournament.
Exactly. It's two teams that might lose a combined total of three games at home all year. I mean, people were quick to bounce on the fact that Kansas had two straight losses. Well, they lost at Colorado and at Florida. I mean, I was kind of expecting them to get one of them, but the fact that they didn't doesn't mean that they're a detrimental team or that they're not as good as a lot of people thought. It's hard to win at Colorado and Florida.
But you know what? I disagree on this front, in that I think that this Kansas team, they're actually very similar to Kentucky in this regard. The amount of credit that they've been given as a potential national champion contender is just not matching reality right now. I mean, and you look at the contributions the freshmen have made. I mean, they've gotten some good contributions, but they haven't been like overwhelmingly outstanding contributions, and frankly, a lot of that has come against, you know, what's going to be, I guess, the softer part of their schedule. I mean, Kansas is they've got a very tough schedule overall. Maybe end up being one of the toughest in the nation if you look at overall quality of opponent. Not a whole lot of teams. In fact, I think they've only had one opponent so far that's ranked below 175 in the KenPom ratings, which is pretty impressive if you think about it. But it's going to take this team a lot of time to really start to gel once again, or gel to start with. And, you know, it's going to be interesting how they match up, Lee, against, say, an Oklahoma State, who, you know, for whatever you have to say about them, has looked pretty good so far to start this season and does have a more veteran core than this Kansas squad has.
Yeah, Oklahoma State, you could make an argument as the best team in the country right now, given how good they've looked most of the time. They did have the Memphis loss, but their experience, and the problem for this Kansas team is the problem we've seen with a lot of teams with star freshmen, which is that Kansas is as talented as they are and as big of a fan as I am of them. I mean, in the Florida game, Andrew Wiggins, the problem isn't that he was 7 for 15. The problem is that nobody else on the team took more than six shots. And it's going to get to a point pretty soon where teams are going to basically just let Wiggins get whatever he's going to get. And, you know, if you can defend pretty well against the other four guys on the floor, you've got a chance. It's going to be really hard for Kansas to win games if they're just going to go with the Kevin Durant theory of just one guy's going to do everything. I mean, Wade Selden has been a disappointment so far, I think. Ellis hasn't really contributed to the team as much as I think Bill Self would have expected. Traylor's actually been surprised as a rebounder, but they need to find a second option, not somebody as good as Wigan, but they have to have someone else who teams are keeping honest. I mean, it's rare that a team is very successful in March where they have exclusively one player, and usually those are mid-major teams that get first-round upsets, not national title-level teams, which is where the Kansas expectations sit.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I think it's one thing if you're a team that's struggling to find its way from a, you know, like putting the pieces together and getting yourself to the point where by the end of the conference season you're a legitimate threat to do something in the tournament. It's another when you have those expectations on you like Kansas does. And I think, you know, I'm going to go and bring Kentucky into the mix now because I really think we need to talk about them. They beat Boise State on Tuesday 70-55, but then – you know, Kentucky turns around and they lose to North Carolina on the road this week. That follows losing last week in that game against Baylor in Arlington, Texas. And, you know, David, this Kentucky team, again, just seems like another one. It's almost a carbon copy of last year. They've got pretty much the same quality of victory on their resume right now. I mean, this year they have a neutral court victory against Providence. Last year they had a neutral court victory against Maryland. They really have nothing else on their resume at this point. They've gotten pretty good play overall out of Julius Randle, out of Aaron Harrison, out of Willie Cauley-Stein, but they've failed every major test that they've had so far this season. And the thing with Kentucky is they don't have a lot of major tests left that they can take this year.
Right, and I mean, it was the same situation last year, and again, I would say they're two. I mean, Boise State was a decent win. Providence was a decent win. They weren't good, or they're not great, and they better hope that that's not the best thing on their profile at the end of the year. But if they get in the conference play, win their home games, win or most of their home games and close to half of their road games, is that going to be enough in this league? There aren't a lot of good teams in the league, and I know people are big on Missouri right now. The next true road game Missouri wins will be their first. I'm not as excited about them as a lot of other people are. They've proven they can play well at home. That is not the whole package. All that means is that they're good at home. So, yeah, to your point, is Kentucky going to get the wins that they need to get like a 3-4 seed, or even, you know, last year they didn't get in at all.
Right. And Kyle, you know, it's one of those situations now where you look at Kentucky's schedule, they have a huge game coming up in a week when they host Louisville. And Louisville, while, you know, they stubbed their toe earlier on this season when they played North Carolina and really haven't played a whole lot of others, they're still very highly regarded. The KenPom ratings really like them a lot. They're the number one team overall in that now, as we've gotten into the full 2013-2014 version of those rankings. But you know, Kentucky loses that Louisville game. You've got, obviously, home games against Tennessee. You've got a home game against Florida. And then you've got a lot of road games the rest of the way. They don't really have a whole lot of other options where they can pick up significant victories at home. I'm really curious to see what happens with this Kentucky squad. And I'm curious, from your perspective, you know, what is your opinion on some of the people that are covering basketball regularly now? They just refuse to come off this Kentucky bandwagon that they built by, you know, nail by nail by themselves during the off season.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because I was reading Gary Parrish's article yesterday about Kentucky, and it occurred to me that it's no wonder that we keep repeating these mistakes, because for Gary Parrish and other members of the media, and Gary Parrish is certainly not the only criminal on this, but for him to admit that this whole, you know, freshman model is not working, and just automatically putting, you know, the most talented, you know, even if it's a freshman laden group, the most talented team automatically goes to number one every year, that means they have to admit they're wrong. And for them to come around and admit Kentucky is a failure again for the second or, you know, for the third or fourth time in 4 or 5 years. Obviously, 2012 was a success. They won the national title. You know, 2011, they made the Final Four, but they were underachievers for the entire year. Last year, they made the NIT, and this year, we're right back. I mean, I don't believe for a second they're going to be in the NIT this year, but, you know, it's clear that they are not going to meet expectations, at least throughout the bulk of the season. Well, that's not to say they can't make a run in the tournament.
Here's the thing that I see with Kentucky that's fascinating, and Lee, I want to get your opinion on this as well. You know, right now, and I don't know what the new ratings are going to look like, but Kentucky is 11th in the AP poll. They're 10th in the coaches poll. For what?
They'll be like 15.
But here's the
funny thing to me is they were barely not in the top 10 with two losses. I mean, how many losses?
It's not even the losses that bother me. It's the lack of wins. I mean, they're 11th and then
earning the spot. Yeah, but I assume that for the top programs, they don't need to do much besides print their name to get that. I'm more amazed when they lose these sort of games and don't fall. Like North Carolina, I can't figure out. But luckily, we mentioned Kentucky.
At least they've beaten somebody, though. I mean,
yes,
if you're
they've lost to plenty of nobody.
It's not even like they're out throttling teams. I mean, they were losing for 35 minutes to Cleveland State. They struggled to beat Eastern Michigan.
And I was going to mention that the two games that we haven't really talked much about, the Boise State game, they killed Boise State on the boards, but it was very difficult for Kentucky to pull away in that game.
Boise State had poor shooting game, too. They're normally a good shooting team. They weren't that night. They missed a lot of open looks.
And Boise State, I mean, they had like a six-hour bus ride, which isn't why they lost, but it certainly didn't help.
I'm just saying Kentucky
struggled with a Boise State team more than a Final Four contender team should. And it's obvious to us. It's obvious to everybody except the people who do the rankings. And I expect them to win their next game, but we talk about the Louisville game. This coming Saturday, they play Belmont, and that will not be a walk in the park.
I mean, I don't see Belmont really having a chance to beat them. I'd love to be wrong, but I don't
think so either, but I think that's going to be a tougher game than a lot of people think.
But I guess here's my point, and I think this is going to be fascinating moving forward, because right now, I mean, we'll see what happens with Kentucky's ranking. I don't think they're going to drop much more than 15th, like you said. If they lose to Louisville, I can see the pollster saying, well, they lost to a top five team. We're not going to drop them as a result of that. Then, I mean, they're going to pick up wins in the SEC, but those wins are going to be, frankly, meaningless because they're going to be against bad teams for the most part. It's
they're going to be 9-4 in non-conference and still ranked in the top 20.
Right, and then nothing. If nothing else, they're going to go up in the rankings because they're going to keep winning against subpar competition. It's going to be fascinating if they end up like 9th or 10th in the country at the end of the season in the rankings, and they end up with like a 6th seed because the committee looks at them and says, you have no victories on your resume worth talking about.
I haven't looked at how their split is with Florida this year. How many times and where?
They play twice. They play the first game at home in Rupp on the 15th of February, and then they play them in Gainesville on the last day of the year, on the 8th of March.
Yeah, that has all the hallmarks of a Florida beatdown to get revenge for a like one-point loss at Rupp, which will be hailed as one of the great wins of the season for any team. Florida will curb stomp them at the O'Connell Center, and people will say, well, Kentucky had already clinched a 2-seed in the SEC. And so it doesn't matter. You're right, Galen. They never learn. Well, they're not going to fall in the polls, and we're going to do the same song and dance every single year till the end of time.
Do you get the more sense? Because here's my thing. Kentucky's not the only highly ranked team that is pretty unaccomplished. In fact, I think Louisville's less accomplished than they are. What's Louisville? Okay, to be fair, Louisville has clobbered teams the way you would expect a ranked team to clobber mediocre or worse teams. But Louisville hasn't really been tested except that game against North Carolina either.
I agree, but the difference is this. Louisville really hasn't given you a reason to drop them significantly in the polls. Kentucky has. I mean, Kentucky's lost to 18th-ranked Baylor, who's seven or eight spots less than them. They've lost to North Carolina, who's 10 spots lower than them. I mean, that... Just those two results right there, you're like, well, wait a minute. You put that in combination with their lack of wins, that's a real problem.
And if anybody's been monitoring this Michigan State team, I'm sorry, this is not an impressive team right now.
I didn't want the Kentucky or Kansas fans to think I was just picking on their teams because I do want to get to Michigan State. You know, we look at this Michigan State team; they have the win against Kentucky, but then you go down their resume from there. They struggled with Columbia. They struggled with Oklahoma. They struggled mightily with this Oakland team. They lost who's awful. 2-9 now.
Yeah, I mean, they're just a whole level of awful. Yeah.
They lost by 14 on their home floor to North Carolina. And I mean, North Carolina's good. They're not a top 4 seed at this point, I would say. I mean, I don't think they're one of the 16 best teams in the country. Maybe they're hovering around the bottom part of that. But the point is, this is not a top ranked team in Michigan State, and we've kind of bandied back and forth the Big Ten rankings and the way that we're looking at the top teams in that conference. You know, them and Michigan both are kind of handcuffed to each other at this point, a firm step below Ohio State and Wisconsin, I would say, at this stage, because there's been very little accomplishment, and even in the games where you would expect Michigan State to do well, they haven't. Now, I know Gary Harris was missing in the Oakland game. That's not an excuse. I mean, when you're playing that poor of a team in what is, where you have a home advantage in some way, shape, or form, and they're playing in Auburn Hills, which I know is close to Oakland, but East Lansing's not that far away. You have to do better than that. You have to do better than what they did against Columbia and Oklahoma, and you sure as hell can't lose by 14 at home to North Carolina.
Yeah, this is a team that'll only finish one or two spots above the bottom of the Summit League. This is a horrendously bad Oakland team.
So, Kyle, what's your read on this Michigan State team then? Because, I mean, this was we felt pretty confident talking about this team as a potential Final Four squad. A lot of experience, a lot of talent, obviously. What's wrong with them?
There's a lot of things wrong. First and foremost, Brennan Dawson has been absolutely an utter failure to this point. I mean, they were expecting big things out of him. He's been very mediocre. Gary Harris wants to be a three-point shooter, doesn't want to be a consistent scorer. He's their best player, but I would say Adrian Payne is their best player. But the problem is, and this is something I pointed out early in the season, Adrian Payne was great for them last year because he was a power forward. As they moved him into the post, he's not a dominant post player, and that, you know, he's just not the same matchup in the post as he is, you know, being a stretch four. And the other thing is they have no depth right now. I mean, they're you know, you get past their starting five, and they become a very mediocre team. And it's just, you know, I think there's a lot of issues right now. I mean, you know, Keith Appling has been inconsistent. And, you know, I just think that if they keep their starting five on the floor, they're still better than most. But even then, like I said, Brennan Dawson's not playing, you know, not playing to his potential. And they've got a lot of issues.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because you look at Dawson's statistics, and they're not bad. I mean, his offensive rating's about 115, and his field goal effective field goal percentage is pretty high. His rebound percentages are pretty good, but it's not really translating into effective play, and I do find that kind of odd. So, I think if this team ever does get things figured out, they'll be pretty scary. But right now, you look at the Pomeroy projections; they're only projected at 11-7 in the conference. Which, granted, that's not the end all be all. I mean, that can obviously change, but from where we thought they might be at the beginning of the season to where they're at right now, it's been a pretty big tumble so far to start this year. So, you know, I think it's interesting looking at some of these teams and some of the struggles that they've had. And, you know, as we – let's maybe take the flip side and start talking about some of the other squads at the top of the rankings. Lee, let me start with you. Arizona – the almost consensus number one in both polls last week. They had a tough test on the road versus Michigan yesterday. And Arizona, they trailed most of the game. They struggled a lot against a Michigan team that was obviously pretty hopped up for the game. But they found a way to get it done in the end. And you know, I can say for myself, as skeptical as I was of this Arizona squad at the beginning of the year, They've done what they've needed to do so far. I've been very impressed with their overall gumption in this college basketball season.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, their win over Michigan, I thought they'd have a lot of trouble in that game, and they obviously did, but more because I think Michigan's maybe a little undervalued right now. I think that was one of the most impressive wins any team's going to have this year. I mean, they were in a hole. They were down 8 with 6 minutes to go. They were down double digits at one point. And they dug deep, and they were able to get behind Brandon and Ashley. And, I mean, it's a game that started off where, at the beginning, it was the Aaron Gordon show for what little offense they had in the first half. He was really impressive. He's the real deal. He's at the level, for me right now, of Andrew Wiggins and all the other freshmen. He hasn't gotten as much play because he's on the West Coast and everything else. But he's a phenomenal, phenomenal player. And for them to fight back and overcome the Nate show, I mean, which, again, this kid drilling threes.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. The spike show, I should say.
Spike,
the
yes. Spike.
I confused him with Nate Walters because that's what it felt like watching him out there. And Spike Albrecht, it really had the crowd was going nuts. He got Michigan out to the lead off the bench. It was just like the Final Four all over again. And then Arizona down the stretch really locked it up defensively. I was really impressed with how they physically imposed their will down the stretch. They're a much bigger team on the inside. They were able to exploit it. It's just a fantastic win for Arizona that I think is going to get a ton of mileage come March, because I do think this Michigan team, right now I think they're the best team in the state of Michigan, because real quick, you mentioned it. I am wholly unimpressed by Michigan State. I thought for Michigan, you know, they kind of let one get away, but I think it's even a loss that will not do them any harm necessarily come March. But Arizona, they right now, I expect them to get all the first place votes.
Yeah.
Here's Michigan's problem. I was looking at this yesterday. Right now, they have one victory over Ken Pomeroy top 250. One.
Yeah. And that's
John Beilein's never been the strongest scheduler.
Yeah, but if you look at what they've done to teams outside the top 250, I mean, they've looked pretty good.
Well, and you also factor in that victory they had was an overtime game against Florida State. And if you think about Minnesota, who, you know, beat that same Florida State team by double digits, that doesn't bode particularly well, I think, for this Michigan team as they move forward. I do think Michigan overall, I mean, they've got some things going for them, but I'm really curious to see what happens. They play Stanford on the 21st on a neutral floor. What is that a part of? Does anybody know? Or is that just a standalone game?
It's in New York, I believe.
Okay.
I'm not 100% which tournament.
Is it one of? I want to say that's the Barclays Center Hoops Invitational, maybe.
It could be, but whatever. I mean, that's a game they need to win easily because Stanford's not that good. But they get in again. This is a team where you get into the Big Ten season. It's going to be interesting to see what happens because I almost feel like the middle is multiplying somewhat in the Big Ten. Like we're starting to see. I think Ohio State and Wisconsin both separating from the pack a bit, which is enlarging that middle. And I think you're going to end up with a situation going down the stretch here as we get into Big Ten season where you're going to have a lot more teams beating up on each other than maybe we thought there would be at the start of the season. I mean,
I guess my concern from a Michigan point of view, Galen, is going to be, and, you know, we won't notice it because against Arizona, a lot of teams are going to look the way they did in terms of physically outmatch. My concern for this Michigan team, it's everyone else's, is the size. The lack of size could be a real problem. I mean, they're on average getting blocked, I believe, on 6.2% of possessions, which is pretty poor.
It's not so much the lack of size as it is the lack of minutes from first-team All-American Mitch McGarry.
Yeah, the Mitch McGarry bandwagon is desolate at this point. He has been... Has he been the most disappointing player in America?
He has to be. He was a first-team All-America selection.
I agree with you, but, you know, the mainstream won't talk. It's amazing, Galen, isn't it? And this is, I guess, to their credit, because Michigan's not like, you know, Indiana or North Carolina is a powerhouse. Just nobody's talking about the fact that a first-team All-American
is
a terrible player.
You know what it is? The Mitch McGarry first-team All-American selection is the Lene Kukua of the college basketball season.
Like voted for him, but he managed to make it.
Right, like, you know, it was the media created it. Nobody wanted Mitch McGarry as the first-team All-American. That was something the media created, just like they created Lene Kukua or allowed Manti Te'o to create Lene Kukua. And now that it's been exposed as a fraud, everybody's just slowly backing away from their ballots. Like, I didn't vote for it. What are you talking about? Oh, I think that that's about the best metaphor I can come up with for this.
I mean, how many post players did Arizona have that were miles better than him? I counted four.
Yeah.
I mean,
and look, everybody's and I feel bad for the kid because I don't think he deserved to be a first-team All-American selection. He didn't ask for it necessarily. I mean, the other people voted for him for that. But he's having a big slump this season, and I think that's going to be
something like 14 offensive rebounds in the second half alone the other day. It was it was surreal.
Yeah.
It's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy because if people think Michigan's going to be a pretty good team, and they were obviously a very good team last year, you would have to think that Mitch McGarry is going to play at that level. When he doesn't, all those predictions completely come unraveled. Just like with, you know, Kansas and Kentucky with the freshman thing. If the freshmen aren't all world, the thought of them being Final Four teams takes a hit.
Last thought on Michigan, I will say this. We were all over this in the preseason, you know, that they were not a top 10 team. We were all over that. But, you know, I will say the one good thing that came out of this Arizona game is Glenn Robinson finally looked like a potential lottery pick. I don't know if he's going to carry that over, but he was the most aggressive I've seen him in his time at Michigan yesterday. For their sake, I hope he continues because they're going to need that.
And it'll be interesting to see if they adjust, if they continue trying to delicately massage this McGarry situation, or if they make the quick change on the fly and realize, you know, we just have to. This has got to become a Glenn Robinson-led team right now. And that's what I think that they'll get the most success out of if they do. But it's easy to say that. It's a lot tougher to actually try and sell that idea.
David, let's switch gears and talk about an undefeated team, one that's creating quite a resume for themselves so far this season and isn't getting a whole lot of play nationally, Wichita State. The Shockers 10-0 now on the season, and they come off what was, for the most part of the game, a drubbing of Tennessee. Got a little bit close at the end, but they ended up winning that one. They add that to a neutral court win over BYU, a nice road win against St. Louis. This Wichita State team, I think without question is they're playing better right now than they were last year at this point. Granted, last year's team, they won at VCU, they won on a neutral court against Iowa, but I've really liked what I've seen out of this team so far.
Yeah, and last year's team, I mean, they did go to the Final Four, but prior to that, they got that 9 seed for a reason. I mean, that's what the seed they should have gotten. And they do have some decent wins. BYU is a decent team. I don't think they're a top 20 team. Winning at St. Louis is very hard. I think that's their best win, personally, although I don't know how much credit they're going to get for that, but it's probably not as much as they should. They beat Tennessee, Oral Roberts, a decent Western Kentucky team. The reason why they will never get the level of respect that Arizona has is because they're not going to get wins of that caliber. They could win out and still not have as many good wins as what Arizona has. They'll likely, if you look at their schedule, there's not a game they play between now and the end where they won't be favored. I don't think they will win out, but they're going to post a very bloated record. I think they're very good. They're very good away from home. But you mentioned not getting respect. Maybe not in terms of press coverage and talking heads and, talking public. They are ranked 10th. And they're ranked a little bit better than what I actually think they are.
Well, they're actually, aren't they ranked 12th in one poll and 8th in the other?
Okay, so I just averaged it out.
Oh, I see. Okay. That's some fine math skills you got there, Lou. It's interesting. Alabama, I mean, going off the rating, Wichita State, going off the ratings, they've only really got three games that look like they're going to be, on paper, a big challenge. Alabama, which is what I was trying to say on Tuesday of this week, that game's on the road. And then they have the two games against Indiana State, who has demonstrated themselves to have a pulse so far this season. They've lost two games by a total of 2 points. And they do have a nice win against Notre Dame on the road. So, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting watching Wichita State and what they do, because obviously they've done what they need to do to maintain a high ranking, and they're not going to have that many opportunities to lose moving forward unless the wheels start to fall off. I want to hit on a couple more of these undefeated teams. And by the way, folks, if you'd like to chime in on the broadcast, you can either leave a comment on the YouTube channel that you're watching right now, or you can tweet us at HoopsHD. We'd be happy to hear from you and answer your questions. Lee, let me hit you with a team that's undefeated and is not getting any national respect, and is not, are they even ranked? No, they are not. Of course, I'm talking about the Pitt Panthers.
They're
10-0.
They got a big game this week.
They have
If you're pandering for respect, you're going to the wrong person on this one.
I'm doing this for a reason. Their KenPom numbers look very good. They have neutral court wins against Stanford. That's about it, actually. They have a home court win against Penn State. They play Cincinnati this week, and then they go into the ACC schedule. I'm not saying they should be ranked, but I think it's funny in this instance, in Pitt's instance, how the people who are voting are like, no, you're a fraud. We're not going to give you the votes necessary to put you in the polls.
They don't play a team they should be expected to lose to until January 18th,
game. And that's Syracuse.
Yes, and I expect them to get their doors blown off in that game, by the way. This is a team, these are the wins. Savannah State, Fresno State, Howard, Lehigh, Texas Tech, Stanford, Duquesne, Penn State, LMU, and Youngstown State. I mean, are you kidding me? Another Jamie Dixon team with a soft non-conference schedule, and when they get thumped in the NCAA tournament, instead of people talking about why it happens again when they don't prepare themselves, it'll just be, well, what a nice turnaround for Pitt this year, which completely misses the point. I think they've had a very nice start, but it's completely justifiable to me that nobody's
More impressive undefeated. Pittsburgh Panthers or Toledo Rockets?
Toledo. It's not even a question. I'll give them this with the schedule. They've managed to have six players in the top 460 on offensive rating in the country. That's pretty impressive. You have to really have a shitty schedule to pull this off. I refuse to make any judgment. Pitt is a middle of the pack ACC team until I see proof otherwise. And Cincinnati is not going to really do it for me, because that's a team that got doors blown off.
Oh my God! They have been very disappointing.
Yeah,
Cincinnati has. I guess we're getting
one of the most disappointing teams in the country.
They really are. Wow. I guess we're going to get to that a little later. But what is Pitt?
I'm not going to say anything about Pitt being any good, just because I haven't seen anything to prove it yet.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see what their combined opponent record is. I can't find it. Their strength of schedule, I think, is 314.
Well,
and I 349 teams this year.
I will say this. I would disagree. I think Pitt's is undefeated record is slightly more impressive than Toledo. The best team Toledo has beaten so far this year has been Stony Brook, and they gave up 99 points on 76 possessions to Stony Brook in that
That's
game.
A, I'll tell you, that is a tricky Stony Brook team.
Oh, come on! Anyway, a couple other undefeated teams, if you're not familiar with the teams that are out there that are undefeated. Let me ask each of you a question about each of these teams, and don't give me a long answer. Just give me a good or not good on these teams. I'm going to skip Ohio State and Arizona, but David, Missouri, good or not good?
Fair.
That's not a possible answer here,
not
unfortunately.
Good.
Okay, thank you. And I think with Missouri, I will dwell on them for just 1 second. You know, they did beat West Virginia, which isn't that impressive, and they beat UCLA, which is pretty impressive. I mean, UCLA played pretty well overall. You know, if the SEC might just be bad enough that this Missouri team could get through the rest of the season with only like five losses total. I think that them playing Illinois this coming weekend is really going to be interesting.
Before the show, I did check with the SEC league office, and Missouri is going to be required to play half their conference games on the road.
Yeah.
And they're going to struggle in every one of them.
Yeah, but I don't know if I agree with that, because they're going to have to travel to such difficult locales as Auburn and you know, Georgia and Alabama. I mean,
last year.
Last year, if you look at what they did in conference, yeah, you're right. They did. They really struggled away from home. But you know what? Darn it, this year might be different. It's hard to say. You know, you're probably
Frank Hayes,
right.
Hello?
Yeah, Frank Hayes. It's not going to be different at all. Never mind.
Right,
Kyle.
That's why I'm willing to say not good, because I know in the end the coach will screw it up.
That's a fair point. Kyle, let me hand you one. St. Mary's, 8-0, good or not good?
I'm going to have to say good for right now. I'm always skeptical of this St. Mary's team, but they're playing well so far. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt.
They have beaten – now, here's the thing. They have decent wins. I mean, they've beaten
– Yes, they do.
Well, okay, but here's the thing. When I say decent, I mean, they've beaten Louisiana Tech, Akron, North Dakota State, Drake, all at home, and they beat Boise State on the road. I mean,
that's
none
decent.
Of – well, none of those teams are getting into the NCAA without the automatic bid at this point, I would say. I mean,
their volume shooting at top 25 mid-majors.
That's
– I have to say this.
And that's fair. Go ahead. Go ahead, Kyle.
I would say beating any one of those teams, beating any singular one of those teams, not that impressive, but I will say the fact that they played all of them, beat them all fairly impressively, and didn't slip up, to me that says something as a whole, because they're doing what they should do against decent teams.
And that's fair. I do think, and you know, you can feel free to disagree with me on this if you like, but their season almost entirely comes down to four games remaining on their schedule. The two games versus Gonzaga and the two games versus BYU. The Gonzaga games, I believe they bookend the West Coast Conference schedule for St. Mary's, and then they've got BYU within a 15-day span in February. So that's something to keep an eye on. I would be shocked if they lost any of their next three and they get Gonzaga the day after New Year's Day. So should be interesting. Lee, let me give you one in your general neck of the woods. Massachusetts, 9-0, good or not good?
Oh, they're good. They're good. They I think they're legit. Chaz Williams, who it looked like he might have twisted his ankle in their last game, but I think he finished it and will be okay. Chaz Williams has been awesome. Katie Lalanne has been a revelation as a junior big man for the Minutemen. They've gotten great contributions out of Derek Gordon, a sophomore, and the senior Samson Carter, who just stuck around and stuck around and stuck around when it looked like there was no light at the end of a very long tunnel, and has been one of the more efficient shooters on that team. I think this UMass team is legit. They have a really top level guy who can win you who can make the big shot in Chaz Williams. They're a deeper team than people think. I think they're legit. They have a very beneficial A-10 schedule. VCU and St. Louis, they play once, and both of the games are at home. I think this is the best team in the A-10, and I think this is a top 25 team. And I really wish UConn played them this year. It would be a hell of a game in the guards matchup. But
yeah. And I agree with all that. Another interesting thing, they've only played three true home games. Much of what they have done has been away from home.
Lee, buy or sell.
And the funny thing is that
they need the money. That's why.
Well, that's funny thing is their next two games are away from home too. They have to travel to Ohio, and then they have Florida State on a neutral floor. What's that game about?
I think I don't know where is that game?
It's on a neutral floor.
Yeah, I was going to say that was the fourth game of the Classic, but they were in different classes.
Oh, yes.
It's in the home of the Florida Panthers, okay? There you go.
Isn't that the Orange Bowl Classic?
Yes, it is the Orange Bowl Classic. Thank you.
Lee, buyers
will be out for that one, let me tell you.
Galen, that's part of the Orange Bowl Classic.
Thank you, thank you.
That's why it's on the neutral floor.
Kyle, go ahead.
Lee, buy or sell, UMass will be ahead of Calipari, and the former coach of the program in the rankings next week.
Oh, sell. They should be, but they won't.
You think they would realize that
would be a great story and do it, but no, they won't.
Let's move on. I want to kick this back over to David Griggs. Iowa State, 8-0, good or not good?
Very good. I really like this Iowa State team. Again, they haven't done a whole lot away from home. They did struggle earlier in the week against a Northern Iowa team that, you would expect them to have an easy time with. But, they get out there, they played, they came from behind, beat a pretty good Iowa team. I actually walked away from that game more impressed with both of them than I was before it started. But they're a good team. They really are.
Okay.
Can we take a moment to break down what was a phenomenal game on Friday night between Iowa and Iowa State?
Yeah,
I don't know how Iowa lost the game, and not based on like gravity. Like literally, if they ask Fran Dunphy how do we lose that game, his answer should be physics, because Iowa had a couple of shots to win, and like they weren't even bad shots.
Right.
The balls rolled out. I thought Iowa had several great looks to win, and just the crowd was psycho. It was very drunk, very lively, and Iowa State. That's a huge win, but I'm just as impressed by Iowa there. I'm like their number one fan here, but I thought they played great.
Actually, if you ask Fran Dunphy, I think his answer should be, "Why the hell are you asking me?"
Right. That's a big cap for you.
That's what I was gonna say. Yeah.
I will say, I really enjoyed that game. I think the reason Iowa lost was simple. They shot 4-for-17 from three. And,
that too. And of course, it made sense when they missed a wide-open look at the end then.
I mean, you look at what they did. I mean, they out-rebounded Iowa State 49-35 in that game. They shot the ball pretty well. They shot 46% on the game. But it's Hilton Magic. It's actually, if you've never been to Hilton, that is my third favorite basketball venue, I think, of all time that I've been to personally. It's a lot of fun there, even when the team isn't necessarily that good. And, I think Iowa State needed that game more than Iowa did. I think both teams needed the win, but you look at Iowa, I mean, they're still lacking a real signature victory, but they'll have plenty of chances to get that in the Big Ten.
Yeah,
I don't know that Iowa State will have that many chances in the Big 12. I mean, they'll
have basically Texas, Galen.
Well, right. Yeah, I mean, they've got Kansas, and don't forget West Virginia and
West
Kansas
Virginia,
State
Galen,
at this point. But no, Iowa State, I mean, outside of Kansas and Oklahoma State, I don't know that they're going to face as good of a team as they faced in Iowa the rest of the regular season.
So, right, and that was
go ahead.
I'm just going to say, like, Iowa is another team that struggled away from home last year. Of course, they didn't play much away from home until conference play. This would have been one of their bigger road wins in years. It may have been one of their biggest wins, period, in years. I was really impressed with how well they played. At the end, they just couldn't hit anything. It seemed like it was their game to win all the way up until the 39th minute.
Yeah, I didn't expect them to be able to dominate Iowa State on the boards like that. I can't remember the last time a Fred Hoiberg team – yeah, I got the right coach
–
dominated on the boards like that, and they still found a way to their credit. I think both these teams are really good.
Let's we're running short on time here, so let me get to a couple more of these. Lee, Oregon undefeated coming off that win last night versus Illinois. Good or not good?
I think they're good, but – it's a they're more of a hold than a buy right now. They are 9-0. They haven't played a pit level joke schedule, but they have the biggest win was their I mean, well, Georgetown isn't nearly as good as we thought. But
that's still their biggest win, though. I mean, you know,
Georgetown is every bit as good as we thought.
Your other options are Illinois, Ole Miss, and Pacific. Those are your other win choices.
I'll tell you, the Ole Miss game, if folks watched it, and I hope none of you were as deranged as I who did, they overcame the Marshall Henderson show at the end there. But I do have questions when you need OT to beat Ole Miss 115-105. I mean, this was a game, Galen, straight out of 1988. It was awesome.
How the hell do you have a 90-possession game, even in an overtime period? I mean, good Lord.
It was fabulous to watch.
Yeah, it was.
It was like I was waiting for the chalk to start permeating the air because the crowd was into it and the fire marshal. It was just out of a late 80s game. It was awesome. But as for Oregon going forward, the big game, of course, is this Saturday. They've got the huge home showdown with BYU. This is a game that will, if they get this game, they really will be a solid team in terms of feeling good about their chances to make the tournament as a decent seed, to wear white in the first game, as Dan likes to say. But and also, if they get the BYU game, then they can put BYU, Illinois, and Georgetown together as three non-conference wins that, while not overwhelmingly impressive, they're three solid wins. And that's three more solid wins, or it's two more solid wins than Michigan State's got. So.
Yeah. Last one, Kyle, let me throw this team at you. Villanova, good or not good?
I'm going to cautiously say good. I think their defense is definitely legit. They can defend anybody. I've got questions how well they're going to be able to score. I think if we're looking at, NCAA tournament good with a decent seed, I'm going to say good. If we're looking at anything more than that, I'm going to say no on that.
Can Villanova go into the Carrier Dome and beat Syracuse?
From what I've seen so far, I would say no.
Okay.
If today's Syracuse team played, they could. Second half, when Syracuse, with about 15 minutes to go, decided to just not just switch off, but like pull the plug out of the wall and throw themselves out the window.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. They were really fortunate. They were fortunate that they were playing St. John's.
Yeah.
Didn't we have this same conversation last year where it was I forget who it was. It was some team. And we said they were fortunate to be playing St. John's. And I just that might be one of our first really reliable.
For the sake of time, I'm not going to take the easy bait and talk about how unbelievably stupid St. John's was. I mean, oh, my gosh. I won't get started.
They were very dumb. Anyway,
this version, not to be confused with the previous equally stupid versions, I'm trying to find where this game might be. It's probably the Notre Dame game, Galen, you mean.
I think you might be right, actually, yeah. Anyway, we got a little bit of time left. Let's go through the games coming up this week as we're in finals week for a lot of schools. Mm-hmm. So we've got some good games on the weekend, not a lot before then. But, David, first one that pops up, really the only good game of note on Monday, Delaware at North Dakota State, quite a trip for the Blue Hens. And they take on an ND State team that it's been a little disappointing. I mean, they're seven and four. They have a big loss at North Dakota, which wasn't on the cards, but they did beat Notre Dame earlier this week. Who do you like in this game?
North Dakota State. I think North Dakota State wins it big. Now, the thing is, that North Dakota team, I think they're going to end up doing semi-decent in the Big Sky, but I mean, I think that completely offsets the Notre Dame win, and they had a chance to beat a decent Southern Miss team at home, didn't get it, had a chance to win at St. Mary's, didn't get it. Now, having said that, I think they're going to be favored in pretty much all the rest of their games. They did win at Notre Dame. They really didn't put up much of a fight against Ohio State. I thought that they'd at least make them sweat a little bit more than they did. But North Dakota State's good. Even if they run the table, their profile probably won't be as good as their actual team is. But I do like them at home.
Well, the problem isn't losing to North Dakota. It's getting blown out and giving up 95 points. That's where the problems start.
That will create issues for anybody. Tuesday games. We've got some decent ones, actually. We mentioned Wichita State, Alabama. I mean, Wichita State is barely favored in that one, and Alabama has been Alabama so far this year. I mean,
Alabama's not good, and Wichita State's very good.
I'm telling people what Pomeroy is saying about the game. I'm not announcing it myself, okay? So let's just everybody chill. But yes, Alabama's best win on the season is against Texas Tech. Their second best win of the season is against Georgia State. Draw your own conclusions. We've got Florida and Memphis. Kyle, this one might be a little bit intriguing. This one's in Madison Square Garden for whatever reason. I mean, can we just invent? This is the Vlasic Pickle Classic in New York. I don't know who the hell knows what it actually
is. Probably the Holiday Hoops Classic.
But it probably is the Holiday Hoops Classic. Memphis, only one loss, and they avenged that loss by beating Oklahoma State later. They also beat LSU. Those both games happened in Orlando. This is the last real non-conference test for this Memphis team, and they face a Florida squad that, as we mentioned earlier on, is, you know, they lost to Wisconsin, they lost to Connecticut. Both those games were very close. They turn around and they beat Kansas. Who do you like in this contest?
Yeah, this is not even going to be a close contest. Memphis was absolutely struggling with Arkansas Pine Bluff this past week. They finally pulled away at the end, but with like 8 minutes to go in the game, it was a one-point game. It was a very, very poorly played game by Memphis. I like the way Florida is playing, you know, the Shabazz Napier buzzer beater notwithstanding. I think Florida wins this going away.
Wait, okay. You don't trust Josh Pastner to put together a winning streak against good teams?
No, I do not trust that at all.
Wow, what a shock.
That's fair.
I don't either.
I figured you didn't.
Yeah.
We've got another odd one. Charlotte traveling to Florida State. That game going on Tuesday. David, this Charlotte team, they've beaten Michigan on a neutral floor. They lost to Davidson in overtime. They lost to a really bad College of Charleston team on the road. Do they have any chance at upsetting the Seminoles in this game?
I think so, because when Charlotte brings it, they're good. But when they don't, they're terrible. I think they have a chance, but no, I mean, I am still thinking Florida State wins rather handily. Maybe not a blowout, but they won't be sweating too much in the last minutes of the game, I don't think.
All right, fair enough. Wednesday, a couple games on the radar. We mentioned UMass at Ohio. That might be an interesting game. Stanford at UConn. That game actually taking place in Hartford. Lee, any thoughts on that game? Are you worried at all?
No, I'm actually worried about the Washington game this weekend because Washington's so bad.
They are bad.
On the road, it's a long trip. A Stanford game, not really. I mean, if this UConn team wants to really be a top 10 team, they've got to not win by a point against a team with a pulse. That's my suggestion. I expect this to be a game UConn wins rather handily just because the expectations I have for this team.
Right.
If they don't, I'm going to start to have some real questions. It is going to be interesting to see a 9 p.m. tip-off in Hartford. I the last time there were that many people that late in Hartford, I think the Whalers were playing the Canadiens in the 1987 Adams Division semi. I mean, it's an interesting scenario.
Doesn't the city close at 9:30? Like, isn't that going to be a problem for everybody?
9:30 is pretty generous, thank you. no, it's going to be interesting, to see what the crowd, because, I mean, they haven't sold out Hartford in a long time, and the team's good. The team's exciting. I think they'll have a really nice crowd for this. But this is a game where they got to come out and just put Stanford down early. They can't be letting a team like Stanford hang around if they want to consider themselves a Final Four level team. I don't think I'm breaking news when I announce that, but it's the reality of the situation.
I was not shocked by that news at all. Kyle, we've got Texas, North Carolina. Is this not a perfect selection or perfect chance for Texas to win a game that nobody thinks that they should and for North Carolina to have a complete letdown?
Yeah, I was thinking yes. When I was looking at North Carolina's schedule the other day, that was my first exact thought. This seems like a perfect time for North Carolina to lose a game. And, you know, to be fair to Texas, I'm not sure I'm not sure that they've really done anything to prove that they're better this year, but they are it does seem they're playing better. I think that North Carolina's backcourt is still highly suspect. I mean, after Marcus Page, they don't have another guard on the roster. I mean, I guess Kenny Britt is technically a guard, but they don't really have any other guards on the roster right now. This is a game that is going to be very difficult for North Carolina, and I would not at all be surprised to see Texas win it.
And keep in mind, we've been bagging on Texas for the last 3 years, 4 years it seems like, but they've only lost one game to BYU. They beat Temple on the road in overtime. They beat Vanderbilt at home. I mean, that's all that they've done that's even remotely impressive. But hey, at least they're 9-1, which I think is better than most people thought they'd be.
More than Pitt.
More than, that's right. They've done more than Pitt has.
I'm at the point where I've talked myself into North Carolina winning the national championship with no players coming back. Because they're insane. They're psycho. I can't figure them out.
Just well, that's the thing. They'll lose in the first round of the NCAA tournament.
They'll win it as an 11 seed.
But that's the thing. I think if they were an 11 seed, they might win it. But they're going to be a three seed, and they're going to end up losing
the first game. Yeah,
to like Northwestern State or something like that. David, one last game I want to talk about from Wednesday. Indiana State at St. Louis. Intriguing.
It is. Indiana State, minus the Notre Dame game, I haven't been overly impressed with them. I know that they're 7-2. They were awful up in Alaska. They haven't done a whole lot other than win at Notre Dame. And St. Louis is really, really, really good at home. It's an intriguing game. It would be a win of note for whoever comes away with it, but I think St. Louis gets it done.
Moving on to Thursday, back to Madison Square Garden. This is obviously the Jiffy Treat classic, or maybe the Jiffy Pop classic, whatever. But
this is the Holiday Christmas Winter Festival Showcase brought to you by Chase.
Right, thank you. Okay, so we have Duke UCLA, two subpar defensive teams. UCLA got off to a good start this season and then got themselves run out of the building in Columbia in the second half of that one. They don't have very many impressive wins at all. In fact, I would say the number is precisely zero. Duke, for all the pomp and circumstance, they have one impressive win, and it was at home against a Michigan team that doesn't have any size. I guess maybe if you want to count that Alabama game in the preseason NIT, maybe that was exciting and impressive. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. But two teams that aren't that great. They're not terrible. I mean, these are teams that are both going to be in the tournament. But, David, who do you like coming out of this matchup?
I kind of like Duke. I mean, I don't know. But like you said, both. I mean, again, both teams have bloated records, but they don't really have any good wins, and they failed a lot of their stronger tests. But for some reason, I just like Duke.
Lee?
I also like Duke. I mean, they have been a freaking sieve defensively, but I still think they're a much better team than this UCLA team is right now. And I think Duke's now they're laying in the weeds, Gale. And I mean, we didn't even mention them until this point. And now maybe this is right. I'm sure this is right where Mike Krzyzewski wants the team to be in terms of attention-wise, if not defensively. I think they'll bring a really nice defensive effort and shut down a UCLA team that I think is going to struggle to score. I like Duke in that game.
I was trying to put an S-curve together just for amusement. I had to abandon it about halfway through, but Duke's not very high on my list right now. Their lack of accomplishment right now. This would be a nice win for them if they won on a neutral floor against UCLA.
Right, and if you do the merit rankings, they're way down it.
They are.
What an S-curve is, really.
I'm actually going to take UCLA in this game. Duke's defense has improved compared to where it was a few weeks ago. But I like the way UCLA is playing. I'm not totally sold on UCLA, but I really like the way Kyle Anderson is playing right now. I actually think that they're going to beat Duke.
Okay. Let's flash forward to Saturday's games then. We mentioned UMass Florida State, that one coming up in Sunrise, Florida at I guess it's the BB&T Center now. It used to be the Bank Atlantic Center. You got Marquette, New Mexico, which that's one of the two games going on at the MGM Grand, but the other one's really intriguing, Kyle.
Oh, it's the Disappointment Bowl.
Marquette, New Mexico? Yes.
Both teams need that one. Wow.
The other one's actually pretty impressive, Oklahoma State and Colorado. Another tough test for Oklahoma State and another opportunity for Colorado to keep building what's becoming a pretty impressive resume overall.
Yeah, I don't know how to handicap this one. It's a really interesting game. I think that I think Oklahoma State, Marcus Smart actually, showed he was human the other day, has I think six turnovers. But I think for the most part they're still a top 10 team. I'd like Oklahoma State to win this, but I think if Asia Booker comes out hitting shots, the way he has been so far this year, Colorado's going to give him everything they can handle.
Yeah, Colorado, I mean, they're interesting. They have that loss to Baylor at the start of the year, but, since then they beat Harvard. They obviously beat Kansas. They beat UC Santa Barbara, who's decent. And, again, this is an interesting entree for them. into the Pac-12 season, which is coming up soon. Also going on, we have Michigan State and Texas. Texas having a hell of a week coming up this week. You've got Michigan and Stanford, that going on in Brooklyn. Illinois, Missouri in the border war, I guess that is.
Bragging and then, rights.
Whatever, bragging rights. The border war. The border war is the other one, whatever.
The other one that isn't played.
Right, the other one that isn't played.
We need to get that back.
Georgetown, Kansas, BYU, Oregon, and then we've also got Ohio State, Notre Dame. Notre Dame, we didn't talk about much, but Notre Dame picked up a nice neutral court win against Indiana. Well, is there a reason to? I mean, what
Indiana,
was...
Indiana, I mean, for shame. This Notre Dame team stinks.
They are really bad.
This Indiana team's going to have to win double-digit Big Ten games to feel comfortable, right?
I got a text from Lee. Thanks for screwing over our RPI ranking with that loss to Notre Dame. He's talking about UConn, of course.
UConn and were considered a major conference team. You have had a rough year. BC stinks.
Yeah.
Stanford and Washington, no matter what happens, they do stink.
Yeah.
Indiana stinks. Maryland's a joke. Harvard's going to finish fifth in the Ivy at this rate.
Yeah. It's not. You guys have been the kiss of death for everybody. So congratulations.
Sorry.
But no, it's fine. It happens. Whatever. Anyway.
If we lose a game, we're dropping 40 spots in KenPom. So I'm enjoying it while I can.
Right. Absolutely. Anyway, so a lot of good games at the latter stage of the week, and at that point we're basically done. We got like a week left in December. It's gone by relatively quickly, which is what we always hope for when it comes to December basketball. Because while there are some good games sprinkled about, this is always the desert of college basketball's regular season. So
I think Derek Sherman just dropped three more balls in the time you were talking about Notre Dame.
Yeah, it was an embarrassing loss for Indiana without question. And it really didn't do very much for Notre Dame because by winning the game, they kind of ensured that Indiana had no good non-conference victories, so everybody kind of gets dragged down by that.
Dragged down their own best win by proxy.
Yes, exactly. So, we'll see what happens with both of those teams. I think Notre Dame's really going to struggle. I mean, right now they're projecting out at 9-9 in the ACC and 18-13 overall. I don't think that's getting them to the NCAA tournament. And
how they get the 9 will determine it, obviously, because there is one version of 9 that will get them in, and there is another version of 9 that has a question. I would be shocked if they get 9. I would be really surprised.
I mean,
a lot of questions.
You know. They get to play Boston College twice. That helps. They play Miami once, which doesn't help. They play Georgia Tech twice. That helps. They play North Carolina State once. That doesn't help. And then they play Wake Forest only once. So
is there any reason to think that Boston College Notre Dame wouldn't be played in the triple digits?
At this point, no. I mean,
defense, like, less than optional. Literally, the players don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It's going to be a very watchable game in a certain regard because it will have an Oregon Ole Miss je ne sais quoi to it.
Yeah.
Nobody attempting to defend at all at any point.
Yeah. Last thing before we let you all go, it's interesting if you look at the way that things are being put together right now in this college basketball season. There's really not, I feel like, there's not a clear consensus as far as, who's coming out of the mid-majors or anything like that. I mean, outside of Wichita State, who we talked about already and who's been pretty good, I really haven't seen very many teams that have really impressed all the way through when you get outside of those top seven conferences. And or maybe top eight. I don't consider it the Atlantic 10 to be a mid-major conference. But
fair enough.
You know, whether it's the Horizon League or whether it's the Ivy or whether it's the, a lot of these other conferences, you're just not seeing teams streaking out to the sorts of records that I think we've seen in the past few years. And so we might not have as many surprises coming up from the bottom as we have in the past, at least as far as this NCAA tournament season is concerned.
We're missing our token Southeastern mid-major where you can't see the games on television or online.
Right.
And their game stories are told more as fable than as fact.
Yeah.
And they just kind of rise up and show up and
they're
there in the tournament. My favorite is still the Stephen F. Austin team from 2 years ago.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. The weather was, they were like two losses or something like that.
Yeah,
I mean,
they were like 29-2.
But there's so many bad, like, you want laughs, look at the Big Sky Conference sometime. Look at the Pomeroy ratings. Their best rated team is Weber State, and they're 1-4 on the season.
Yeah, this is a down Weber State team, which automatically means it's a down year for the Big Sky.
And, you know, and the thing with Weber State, like, they're one wins against San Jose State, and they have losses to BYU, Colorado State, Utah State, and Utah Valley State. They have three games left before the start of conference play. Those three games are UCLA on the road. That could be a problem. And then St. Catherine and Northern New Mexico, both of which will not count in the standings. So Weber State, as the top team Pomeroy-wise in this conference, is probably going to go into conference play with an overall record of 1-5, according to the Pomeroy computers, because they won't have any other games that qualify.
Well, let's not rule out an absurdly misleading winning streak from New Mexico State in the WAC.
Yes.
Right. There is a team that has not emerged yet that I think is good, and that's this UC Santa Barbara team. They did beat Cal handily at home. They blew out Vegas at Vegas, although they're probably not going to get any credit for that by the time the season's over. They really played Colorado tough on the road. They led UCLA for 38 minutes. Now, again, I think they'll run roughshod over the Big West, but that's one team from outside the major conferences. And then Belmont had the big win.
But they're 4-3 right now, is my whole point.
They're 4-3. They're not there yet. Yeah, and maybe they won't get there, but I think they will by the time it's over.
My point is they're not gonna compete for an at-large bid. They're not gonna be mentioned in those circles. I mean,
there's no team this year where we're thinking, well, what happens if they don't win their tournament?
Right.
I mean, and that's the difference this year.
Yeah.
What about Belmont? Are you giving up on?
I mean, I look at Belmont. I mean, right now they're 8-3, and you know, I mean, they're losing to VCU and losing to Richmond on the road, those aren't bad things, but they lost to South Dakota State. There's no way they get considered for an at-large bid at this point.
Well, they did win at North Carolina.
They lost to South Dakota State by 13 points.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we have to find 60.
The way I see it, I don't see any leagues that are going to get two bids. I see a lot of leagues that will get multiple bids, and I see I see leagues that'll get one bid. I don't see any two bid leagues this year, and that's just because I don't see any mid to low major conferences with a dominant team.
I will say there's one league I think could have two bids, and it's the Mountain West. You know, because you look at what they've got. I mean, New Mexico will probably be in okay shape. I mean, they really could use that win against Marquette, and they really need to beat New Mexico State, I think, this week. Both those games are within 4 days of each other. But I could see, I think they'll be fine. I think San Diego State should be fine. I mean, they've got two really nice neutral court wins on their resume, and they still get to play Kansas, albeit on the road. But you get beyond them. I mean, Boise, for all we've talked about Boise, their only win of even relative note is Utah.
Right.
And you know, they lost their two opportunities to pick up decent wins outside of that. They really have no other options until they get into the Mountain West. And I think we've seen the Mountain West is enough of a meat grinder that you're just not going to see teams pick up enough wins to justify an at-large bid solely by what they did in conference. And so I could see I could see the Mountain West as a two-bid league.
I could see the Big East as a two-bid league. It's kind of more trending that way. Nova is really the only team from that league that has a win over a solid tournament team.
What about Creighton against Arizona State on a neutral floor?
Do you think Arizona State's a solid tournament team? I mean, it's noteworthy, but I don't.
Yeah, I mean, at this point,
Creighton is going over tournament teams, I still think at the end of the day, Marquette's going to get in too.
Yeah, and I think I think Georgetown. You know, I mean, they won on a neutral court versus VCU, which even though that's not that great of a win this year, it's still going to carry a little bit of cachet. They still have a shot against Kansas, and they're, from just a talent perspective, probably going to win, you know, 12, 13, maybe even 14 games in this Big East this year.
Yeah, it's just looking very Pac-12 from 2 years ago to me.
Well, it's not a good league. I mean, anybody that argues. anybody that argues the Big East is a good league in basketball this year is they are high on the drug known as the past.
Yeah.
Oh, geez, I can think of a couple people.
Anyway.
If only I had thought of that idea earlier. I hadn't realized until now, Galen, that maybe not living in 1985 in the good that Dave Gavitt goes.
Hey, there is one team. There is one team that we haven't talked about this year, real quick, and we don't need to spend much time on them because honestly, they haven't done a lot. But I do want to give a shout out to the Utah Utes with a big 17-point win over BYU. This past week. Now, you know, they're 9-1. Now, granted, other than BYU, they haven't beat anybody else really with the pulse. But, you know, their one loss was only a 2-point loss to Boise State. This Utah team could be interesting in a very good Pac-12 this year.
They have
Krystowiak needed, that program needed something positive besides the coach beating up burglars. I mean, I am happy for them that they get something.
Yeah. I will say this, they have a better resume than Pitt.
They also have St. Catherine coming up.
They do. St. Catherine's getting around. I mean, she means business.
Is Catherine with a C or Catherine with a K? I've noticed there's two St. Catherine's out there.
It's Catherine with a K.
Oh, okay. It's
Catherine with a K.
First year varsity program.
One thing. Oh, my God. One last thing I will say. I'm flipping around on television last night, and I run across the Pac-12 network. And what are they showing on the Pac-12 network? They're showing a replay of the 1998 NCAA Final Four contest between North Carolina and Utah. What's wrong with that? Utah wasn't in the damn league in 1998.
It counts, man.
I hate this so much. I hate it when the Big Ten Network does, like, you know, they'll stick Penn State running backs from the 80s into their greatest running backs of all time list, or when they got Eric Crouch reporting on games like he was a member of the conference or something. Come
on. They put,
like,
the name of a Nebraska legend on one.
You don't
of the
like
trophies.
Retroactive recognition?
No. I mean, that I thought, you know what? I thought Utah accomplished a hell of a lot that year in the WAC, where, you know, they were, or were they
and
in
here
the
I was thinking Nebraska Oklahoma was the second best Big Ten rivalry of all time.
I am with Galen 100% on this, and this is why the Big East is the best conference in the nation right now. It produced two Final Four teams last year and the national champion.
Yeah, it's
I thought
the Metro produced the national champion last year.
Yeah,
maybe it did. I don't know.
Yeah, but they also have Virginia Tech weighing them down.
Well, right, and Southern Miss. Don't forget Southern Miss.
This is argument for no Rutgers stuff being run on the Big Ten Network.
The first time something from Rutgers pops up on the Big Ten Network, I'm canceling my subscription. That's all there is to it. Anyway, we got to run. Enjoyed it, guys. Thanks to all of you for watching in and for listening in if you're listening in after the fact. But anyway, for David Griggs, for Kyle Lamb, for Lito Vecchio, I'm Galen Clavio. We'll catch you folks on the flip side. Thanks for watching the Bracket Racket. So long, everybody.